Africa, attorney Bob Boyle, Suzanne Ross, S.B. Martel, Johanna Fernandez, and others. That's Friday, September 11th, 6 to 9 p.m., All Souls Unitarian Church, 1157 Lexington Avenue, between 79th and 80th Streets. For more information, go to www.freemomia.com or call 212-330-8029.
My name is Celia de la Varenne, and I'm the founder and the president of Stop Trafficking of People. Did you know that throughout the world there are 8 million of new victims of sex trade per year? This is what is happening right now in Haiti. This is why Stop needs your help to open a rescue center in Haiti. On September 18th, Alexia Klein, a fashion designer, will host a fundraising event to help Stop to reach that goal. The event will take place in the Fashion District at Au Marché, the Globe Showroom, located 263 West 38th Street. It's on the 11th floor, and we will be waiting for you from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Our website, stoptraffickingofpeople.org.
Come, join us for the 14th annual Vigil for International Peace and Ecology on Sunday, September 20th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. A celebration of live music and dance performances, art installations, and a World Peace Flag Ceremony that celebrates the United Nations International Day of Peace. That's Sunday, September 20th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Central Park, Nuremberg, Banshell, by the Bethesda Fountain. For more information or to volunteer, go to vigilforinternationalpeace.org. That's number 4 in the URL. Or call 646-765-7890. That's 646-765-7890. See you there.
Thanks to you.
Thank you for thinking of me. And I thank you.
And I thank you.
Let me say thank you to all you people out there.
I want to thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Thank you. bathing the warmth of the morning sun.
Tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. There is a very strange buzz in my headphones from this Mac. Okay, so we're blessed to have a technician right here at my elbow. Here, take these headphones, and I'll let Paulette introduce the program.
Celebrate his birthday memory. We will play selections from the March 28, 2015 tribute to him that was held at the Riverside Church Theater. So we don't have the complete poem, but we have a good chunk of it, and we think that you will enjoy it.
And of course, you're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. And Robert Knight had this conflict. Am I speaking?
I'm not convinced.
Okay, so we're in deeper trouble. Someone is playing something on another machine. Well, yes, I see levels from my mic at this moment. Okay, so we had a little technical snafu. Again, we were very lucky to have someone standing by who could help us with that one, because I would have been lost. So once again, you're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine, in studio with Paulette, and we're doing a tribute for Robert Knight in commemoration and in celebration of his birthday, which was September 6th,
yes.
And it's, I think, fitting to offer that in this time slot, since this is where Earthwatch broadcasts from, this Wednesday midnight slot. And we will be moving to the first segment in just a moment. Max, where are we here?
A different computer.
I need the other computer,
okay.
Please. Is it still coming through?
I turned the whole computer off, so.
Okay. So can I give a shot here, see if we can
yes.
play? And what are we listening to this first?
We are listening to Robert Knight
speaking. I'm not on the air. We're going to be listening to Robert Knight speaking at the Schomburg Library for Research in Black Culture, which was given on October 19, 2002, and the topic of discussion was Black Liberation Theology.
So let's see if we can get this audio.
Yes, and this
all of the devoted listeners of Earth Watch know my next guest, Mr. Robert Knight, who is the host and producer of Earth Watch, heard Wednesdays at midnight on Pacifica Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. Just this week, I had the privilege to hear him eloquently lay out reasons for using diplomacy and not military weapons to resolve any international concerns regarding Iraq. An award-winning journalist and systems analyst, Robert Knight also works as a fundraising copywriter for WBAI's development department and continues as a correspondent for the news department, where he served as news director for 4 years. Mr. Knight was a founding producer, along with Dennis Bernstein, of the groundbreaking ContraGate news program, and executive producer of the nationally syndicated Undercurrents investigative news program. He is also a featured player in the Oscar-winning documentary, The Panama Deception. Writings by Mr. Knight have appeared in various newspapers, including New York Newsday, the Los Angeles Times, the Lexington Herald Leader, among others, and in a variety of periodicals, with those of his articles on black culture ranging from a feature interview of rap artist Sister Soulja for Spin magazine to a biography of the late historian Arta Afro-Puertorriqueño Schomburg in the premier edition of Civil Rights Journal. His work as an international journalist having taken him to 5 continents, Mr. Knight is the recipient of many awards from diverse organizations and institutions. Several of these awards include the prestigious George R. Polk Award for radio reporting for his investigative work on undercurrents about the developing crisis in and the of Panama, including the last underground interview of General Manuel Noriega. The Jesse Meriton White Award for international reporting, named after the first female foreign correspondent. The Humanist Journalism Award, presented by the Humanist Foundation. The News Reporting Award, presented by Asian Americans for Equality. And the New York Association of Black Journalists Radio Reporting Award for a documentary series on covert activities in apartheid South Africa. But Mr. Knight repudiated that honor following the National Association of Black Journalists institutional failure to support the rights of death row journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal. Please help me welcome frontline international journalist Mr. Robert Knight, who will bring us brief remarks.
Even as a journalist, it's very difficult to describe what a breathtaking honor it is to be here in the spirit of Betty Shabazz, El Hajj Malik Shabazz, Arturo Afro-Borinqueño Schomburg, Mary Ngu Ekwukole, Dr. McLaughlin, others. The theme of tonight's conversation is black liberation theology, and perhaps the obvious bears stating that black theology has always necessarily been about liberation for Africans in this criminal continent. And as Malcolm said, the problem of the 20th century is that of the liberation of black people in America. In 1964, the National Committee of Black Churchmen issued a statement saying that black theology is a theology of blackness. It is the affirmation of black humanity that emancipates black people from white racism, thus producing authentic freedom for both white and black people. Black theology and black liberation is emblematic of freedom struggles all over this planet. And I think it's useful in the spirit of Schomburg, who united Latino struggles for freedom with African history and struggles for freedom. And going back to those years of the 1960s, when John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Baines Johnson were stalling and then moving forward on civil rights legislation, at the same time they were doing that, they were repressing in the most brutal way the people of Central and South America through a program called the Alliance for Progress, administered through the Agency for International Development, the Inter-Americas Development Bank, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, in which they ordered that the oligarchy stop producing corn and stop producing cotton for export to the United States, that they produce not only cotton, but cattle as a cash crop. We talk about banana republics, but the truth of the matter is, this government produced hamburger republics in the Americas. And in doing so, what happened to the campesinos, the peasants, the poor Latino people of Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and South America? What happened was their years and centuries of subsistence farming with the corn came to an end. The oligarchy, looking for that American dollar, threw them off the land. They came back. They planted more corn. They threw them off again. And this is how the death squads were born. The rich folks, at the behest of the United States, hired killer squads to get them off the land. And they were thrown off the land. Massacres abounded. And in fear and trepidation, they left their ancestral lands, coming to the urban centers where they complained to the priests of the Catholic Church, giving the birth to what we academically know as liberation theology. But it's only one part of a simultaneous movement across this planet that took place. They complained to the priests, and they, in their moral necessity, became radicalized. The same thing was happening simultaneously in the United States with the death squads of the Ku Klux Klan in the South. The same displacement of poor people from the land was happening with the eviction of sharecroppers. The same thing is happening with the eviction of people from Harlem today. And where do you go? You go to the church. You meet with your community. And there are ministers, leaders who, through transpersonal responsibility, try and take on the needs of the community. The liberation of the world is contingent upon the liberation of black people in America today. And before we continue our conversation, I'd just like to add one more element to this global mix of black theology and liberation. And that is, a part of the church, whether we make it at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning or not, a part of the church has been our extended congregation of culture and music. Back in the 1960s, out of Aretha Franklin, daughter of Reverend C.L. Franklin, singing the gospel on commercial records, out of the roots of jazz music, out of Motown. Anybody remember a song? I'll tell you how we sang it in North Carolina by the Temptations. Oh, discrimination is fading fast. Segregation is a thing of the past. Can't see how that thing is going to last. See, music is part of our congregation. And with the parallel influence of government corporate satirizing of black culture, with rap violence, with aberrational behavior that sells more to white folk than it does to black folk. Our church of the music world has gone astray. We have to come back to the roots of our spirit, our religion, and our liberation. Thank you for listening.
At the Schomburg Library for Research in Black Culture on October 19th, 2002, as part of the very first in their Shabazz Conversation series. And now we're going to just been listening to an arrangement by Mr. Roy Jennings, who was also the pianist of the Negro spiritual We Shall Walk Through the Valley. And the singer was Mr. Marvin Lowe. And the performance was at the St. Paul's Chapel at Columbia University earlier this year. And now
we're going to hear...
We're going to hear a special tribute that Steve Cates had prepared, and whether that was played during the event.
Okay, and that will work, hopefully.
Yeah.
But it's not. I'm sorry. There it is. Okay, I think we've got it.
Hello. I'm Steve Cates, Dr. Sky, and welcome to a celebration of the life of Robert Knight, our dear friend and colleague. As you're watching this, I just wanted to reminisce.
Oh my.
I think I'm just going to have the giggles all the whole time because this is moving to a level of comedy. It's okay. It opened twice. Let's pause it. Move it to the end.
This is the age of technology.
Hello. I'm Steve Cates, Dr. Sky, and welcome to a celebration of the life of Robert Knight, our dear friend and colleague. As you're watching this, I just wanted to reminisce about some of the great times that we had with Robert Knight on WBAI and my portion on his show known as Earthwatch. I walked into the studios of WBAI back in 1980 as a young college student with little or no experience in broadcasting. And time after time, management at the time told me I didn't have any credentials to do an astronomy report on WBAI. And though I understood that, I went back and continued to pursue my dream. One day, I walked into
Okay. We're going to go to the backup plan.
Yeah.
You also have this on an MP3 file, do you know?
I do.
Okay, so we're going to see if we can... let's see. Okay, we're going to go to the MP3 file and see if we can get that to play. Well, we're not going to be able to get that to play in this moment. The next speaker is...
Well, maybe we can do that a little bit later
on. Of course we can. We'll figure it out.
The next speaker is Mr. Ted Fleming. And Ted Fleming was a very, very close friend and classmate, comrade of Robert in the late 70s when they were both young men in their early 20s. And Ted was a member of the group of journalists you've heard us mention before, who collaborated on a project called The Paper at City College. And so Mr. Fleming is the next speaker, and he speaks about his friendship and wisdom that he got from Robert in early age.
Our next speaker is going to be Mr. Ted Fleming. He knew Robert when Robert was in his early 20s at City College. And so I'm happy to announce Mr. Ted Fleming. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody, and it's my extreme pleasure to be here. Robert Knight was my friend. He was my brother. He was my colleague. He was my hero. He was my wingman and vice versa. From our early 20s, we moved into a situation at the paper where we knew that we were engaged in psychological warfare. But all during that period, we knew, as we stood by each other, that like when reason and panic were clashing, when people lost our heads, that we would be steady on to make sure that we got the job done. Before I get into some of the more serious stuff, because we have time constraints here, let me just make a couple of references to Robert's humor. All right. Robert Knight is one of the best reasons that a person should be educated. Because if you are educated, you get the jokes. I find it particularly impossible to refer to Robert Knight without invoking Albert Einstein. It wasn't just about him understanding the theories therein. He demonstrated them. He lived them. And he led all of us to a better place because of that. Simply this. Cutting it short, he's telling a joke, and the next thing you know, you hear, well, that was no ordinary masked man. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, my cue. Hi-o, Silver. All right. Now, some friends of mine have been working on a joke, and I'm going to, how you say, try it. But I want you to think of Robert Knight smiling with a bemused look on his face. So we will start out with this. How does a mystic order a hot dog? Make me one with everything. So the mystic hands $10 to the vendor for a $5 hot dog. The vendor just stands there after giving him the hot dog. He doesn't move. He doesn't say anything. Finally, the mystic says, my change. And the vendor looks at him and says, change comes from within. Robert knew. I realized something. He and I had discussed this business before. Robert Knight, in my experience, he never talked about death. He used the word discorporation because he knew that he had seen beyond the veil. So I'm never going to be saying Robert Knight was. I will always be talking in the active present tense. Robert Knight is. That discussion started when we were looking at the cover of Ebony magazine after the assassination of Martin Luther King. And on the cover it said, the living king. And that's how the discussion started. So, I had, shall we say, an enlightening experience. And I shared it with only a couple of few people in the world. Robert was one of them. And as I talked about it, he listened intently. So when we got back to the subject, he referred to it as, when you got religion. And at first, I didn't quite get it. Then I realized what he was telling me. He was telling me that, like, you are theological whether you realize it or not. And he was the kind of person that would help you become who you are supposed to be. By example, by mentoring, and any other way that he saw fit to do it. So, I'm going to wrap this up until I get another venue, and that means I'm going to have to do some writing and talking to some folks around here. I was able to achieve my heart's desire based upon the influence of Robert Knight. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be standing here, and I wouldn't be who I am. What I wanted was plain and simple. A ticket to ride through the Twilight Zone. Robert Knight, Rod Serling, Albert Einstein, and all of the great minds in between. I got my wish. And so, at some appointed time, we'll raise a glass to my brother, Robert Knight. How you say? Liberté, equalité, humanité. Thank you.
And we were just listening to Mr. Ted Fleming, a friend of Robert's from his early 20s. And now we are going to listen to Mr. Dennis Bernstein. And we hope that this works well.
Next speaker is none other than Mr. Dennis Bernstein.
Thank you, Paulette. Honor to be here. Can you all hear me? Just tell me, okay? Let me bring you greetings from KPFA Pacifica Radio in California, the first ever free speech, non-commercial, no hold bars, truth to power radio station in this country. And that's the way we want it to stay. Non-corporate, truth to power. Now, Robert did what the great and courageous Israeli journalist Amira Haas does and talked about in terms of what a real journalist should do. Amira Haas, she reports for Haaretz from the West Bank, incredibly courageous reporter, and she said, the job of any good reporter is to monitor the centers of power, whether they be the government, the corporations, or whatever criminals are out there, and report back to the people. The idea was not to get friendly and go to parties of important people, but to develop sources and create information which was power that the people, with a small p, could defend themselves to monitor the centers of power and report back to the people. You agree Robert did that? He did that, didn't he? He did it well. Robert used to do the night report on the Flashpoint show, which comes out of California, which I host. And those 7 to 10 minutes, the rhetoric, the structure, the prose, the way in which he revealed through syntax, understanding the nature of linguistics, was extraordinary. The night report. I'll never forget, you know, we have these internal fights, and some people at KPFA felt that, well, Roberts wasn't really news reporting, so they needed to have a local news person read from AP first to get the real news out. But Robert is the real news, was the real news. Let me just tell you one or two stories. We did the show first called Contragate. Anybody remember that? And then it became Undercurrent. So it was a focused show on Iran-Contra that then evolved out into many other subjects. And obviously, that's where Robert got into Panama. And that's where Robert managed to track down Manuel Noriega while he was still in hiding, do an interview, and again, report to the people outside the corporate flow and filter. And that's why that interview with Manuel Noriega won Robert Knight the George Polk Award. And I'm glad they recognized that work. So just a couple of anecdotes now. After we began to break Iran-Contra, we were speaking everywhere. And I remember there, I want to tell you about two occasions. One was at a synagogue on Long Island. And after Robert and I spoke, an older guy wearing a yarmulke came up and started shaking. I was standing next to him, started shaking Robert's hand and started saying, Dennis Bernstein, it's so good to meet you. I hear your grandfather was a rabbi. We were so close, they couldn't tell us apart. They were listening to both of us, you know? And I remember once I went with Robert to a senior center in the basement in Bronx somewhere. And there were a whole bunch of people who were beginning to break Iran-Contra. And after we spoke, she probably was 90. This 90-year-old young woman strolled up to the front of the stage, patted Robert on the back, patted me on the back, and said, God, I'm glad you guys are finally getting into dealing with Ronald Reagan and breaking off that Teflon. And she says to Robert, says, but I'm having a little problem. What I do is I put on the radio at 8 o'clock. That was when our show was at 8 o'clock every morning. I put on the radio at 8 o'clock. I start to listen to the show. It's amazing, and I fall asleep. And Robert says, well, I hope we're not boring you. And the woman says, well, no. What happens is I hear you. I know something good is being done in the world, and I can relax and go to sleep. And finally, because I don't have all day, after Robert won, after he found Noriega and did the interview and returned to the United States, just about every network and every reporter in New York City wanted to talk to him about how he found Manuel Noriega and some information about it. And so I had about three television crews in our little rat run of a studio on 35th and 8th Avenue. I had ABC here, CBS here, NBC over there. We had all the locals. Everybody wanted to talk to Robert Knight, but where was Robert Knight? So I went searching. I found him downstairs on the first floor. He had just bought some makeup, and he was getting ready for the interviews. He was late, but once he got in front of the cameras, he knew what to say. As always, in front of the microphone, he knew what to say. Robert Knight, presente, we miss you, my brother, and we're not going to stop thinking about you. Thank you.
That was Dennis Bernstein, who is the host of Flashpoints out of WKPFA Pacifica in Berkeley, California, speaking about his partnership and friendship with Robert Knight. Our next speaker is Mr. Randy Credico, who is a comedian, politician, humanitarian, and former director of the William Moses Kunstler Fund for Racial Justice. And
one thing, if he were here right now, he'd be outside smoking a cigarette during my act. He was one of my closest friends. Everyone can say Robert Knight was, you know, their closest friend. Robert was closest friend. Well, he was one of mine, definitely. I know him for 30 years, Robert Knight. I met him way back at Federal Plaza in 1985. It was something to do with the Libyan April 14th coalition over there, and Robert ended up going to Libya. He went to Libya. I ended up going to D.C. He went to Libya during the bombing of Libya, the one-year anniversary, and I went to D.C., and I was there. American Indian movement, waiting for Gaddafi to come out of the tent. He never came out of the tent. Robert was waiting in the sun, sweating. I saw him, and that was a tough situation. Mine was worse because when I got there, big jumbotron, my opening act, which I should have known, they had all these guys with bow ties and suits on, the American Indian movement, and my opening act was Louis Farrakhan. And so whatever was left of my career commercially at that point was all over while Robert was sweating in the sun in Libya. He's a good man. At any rate, what can I tell you about the guy? He was the smartest guy I ever met. He really was. He was so smart. He really, anyone who knew him really well, the guy knew everything about everything. You know, I used to sit down in a little place on Christopher Street, this place called Kettle of Fish, and have a drink with Robert. And Robert would, be talking about electricity and Fermi and Marconi and how the universe worked. And, after a couple of minutes, I'm asking the bartender, can you give me some LSD so I could try to figure out the key saying over here? That brilliant. He was a combination of Tom Paine and Murat, who were both journalists. Really, they're both radical journalists, Murat, Jean-Paul Murat, and they both were in the French Assembly in 1790, and Paine was actually the right winger, you know? next to Marat, but they both knew about electrical currents and suspension bridges, just like Robert, you know? And Robert, of course, tonight especially, would say it's time that not only we tax Wall Street, but we tax the churches.
And EBO over here right now, and the sound system over here is a...
This is one of the finest sound systems since I spent one day on the C train as a conductor.
Now, top of the sound system,
27th, 19th, 18th, and then 35th. I have a couple of things that I wrote down, but think, and by the way, Robert used to live on 7th Street in the East Village. Did you know that? And the way it looks right now, those three buildings, a lot neater than Robert's apartment, all right, when he used to live. He had comic books. He had everything in that apartment. Man, was it great. It was my favorite apartment in all of New York City. It was wonderful to be over there. He actually did live on 7th Street. And, you know, I didn't really write anything out. Robert wouldn't write anything out as well. He's not a guy. Yeah, he was into the Diogenes school of the oral tradition. You know, Diogenes over Plato. You know, Robert was great with words. You ever? So, all right, we don't have a bunch of books by Robert. All right, where's his legacy? No books. But if you listen to all of the Earth Watches and all of the 5 o'clock shadows in that period of time when he was working as the anchor in the morning on wake-up call, Robert, you take all of that, it's like finding when they translate that into books. It's going to be like Bach wasn't known during his period of time. People are going to know Robert Knight way down the road, okay, for all of his great work using his gift. You take a listen to Robert when he read the news, when he was relegated to like being the news guy on Wake Up Call 99. By the way, he's the only guy who got two Kunstler Fund awards other than Harry Belafonte. Robert Knight did, all right, from the William Moses Kunstler Fund for Racial Justice, whose wife will be up here speaking later on, Margaret Ratner Kunstler. Robert's the only one to get two awards for Wake Up Call and the WBAI short. Because what happens is, when you have these events, it becomes about the speaker rather than the person that we're supposed to be talking about. On that note, I'll be running for governor next year and Senate against Chuck Schumer. No, I'm kidding. All right, let's move forward. And I thank you very much for having me here to speak. I love you, Robert. Robert's out there. The presente Robert Knight.
And so we've just heard Randy Credico. And now we are going to hopefully listen to Mr. Steve Cates.
Yes, and you are listening to WBAI in New York City, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. This is Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight, and we're offering a tribute to the late and most distinguished Robert Knight. And we're going to see if we can play for you this video presented by Steve Cates, and I think it might we'll try it again one of those days. Let's see. Okay, here we are.
I'm Steve Cates, Dr. Sky, and welcome to a celebration of the life of Robert Knight, our dear friend and colleague. As you're watching this, I just wanted to reminisce about some of the great times that we had with Robert Knight on WBAI and my portion on his show known as Earthwatch. I walked into the studios of WBAI back in 1980 as a young college student with little or no experience in broadcasting. And time after time, management at the time told me I didn't have any credentials to do an astronomy report on WBAI. And though I understood that, I went back and continued to pursue my dream. One day, I walked into WBAI again, and I was told that, well, they're just not ready for somebody like me. And here comes a man named Robert Knight that we all know and love and respect. Robert gave me the opportunity of a lifetime, and for some 30 years, I was privileged and honored to be part of that radio show that Robert did at midnight on Wednesday nights on WBAI in New York City. Thank you, Robert, for that opportunity of a lifetime. And, you know, folks, over the 30 years, I can only recount some of the great interviews that we had doing our weekly Skywatch report of things that Robert loved about trans-terrestrial radio and the Earth environment and things in space. We had a rare opportunity to interview the discoverer of the then planet Pluto. And Robert joined me with about 5,000 people atop a High Point State Park in New Jersey in 1986 to witness Halley's Comet. Robert, you'll never be forgotten. The legacy of Earthwatch continues. But I just wanted to add something to this celebration, the life of Robert Knight and what it means to me. Robert, you're a dear friend. You'll be dearly missed, but certainly never gone. We look to the skies. We look for answers to what's out there beyond our physical world here on the Earth. And Robert, the appropriate astrogator, as he would call himself, of Earthwatch on WBAI. Robert, I thank you from the bottom of my heart, as do all the people, our friends and colleagues, sharing a celebration of the life of Robert Knight. Rest in peace, Robert.
We were just listening to Mr. Steve Cates, also known as Dr. Sky, who for 31 years was on the air with Robert, giving everyone an earshot, excellent analyses of the night skies. And we are now going to turn to Mr. Ray McGovern, who is a former analyst and presidential briefer for the Central Intelligence Agency, and he's introduced by Randy Credico and Lionel from WPIX Television.
This next guy kind of dropped in tonight to bring up the next speaker. He's one of the smartest guys I've ever met. He does commentary for WPIX. You've seen him around. Would you please welcome the mononamed Lionel. Lionel.
Thank you very much. Tonight is a celebration of courage, because that's what Robert Knight was courage. And this is also sad for me, who has been and started in talk radio 27 years ago, and now I refer to it as the ossified Jurassic echo chamber, cookie cutter, playbook, corporate, blech, direct, bland radio. This is when it was exciting. And he was courage, and your next speaker is courage. When I saw him tonight, I turned to my wife and said, this is a hero. Ray McGovern, for 27 years, was a member of the CIA. And it's sad when you say CIA today, because your first reaction is not good, and that shouldn't be. This is a man who delivered PDBs, Presidential Daily Briefings. Remember those? Remember Condoleezza Rice? We had no reason to believe that anybody could possibly fly a plane into a building, except for the PDB that was entitled, How Terrorists Will Fly Planes into Buildings. Other than that, it completely caught us off guard. But this is a man who, rather than saying, I'll take my retirement, I'll go away, I've had enough, I did my time, now is a thumb in the eye and a burr under the saddle of some of the most corrupt people in the, I call them, the ruling class. And Ray McGovern is my hero, and I'm so honored to bring him to the microphone tonight. Ray McGovern.
I said to Randy, this must be New York. It never happens in Washington, that's for sure. Paulette, thank you so much. And thank you all so much for being here. Robert Knight, presente. Robert Knight, presente. When Robert Knight first got in touch with me several years ago and asked me if he could have an interview, I said, sure. He mentioned his WBAI credentials, and never did I realize that he would give me a whole 20 minutes or a whole half an hour or whole whatever he had in terms of time, whether it was for WBAI or for some other program. And he was very affirmative. This is another thing that you don't get in Washington. He would tell me, hey, the people are reacting very well to you. And I said, wow. But, you know, Robert was such a nice fellow that I never completely believed them, that I was going over well with your audience. And then Jerry Kushner. And then Lionel come to me out of the blue tonight and say, hey, I heard you on 5 o'clock shadow. And so it's true. It was not only affirmation, it was encouragement to keep doing what we have been trying to do in terms of speaking truth to power. One thing I remember about Robert was that he had this incredible encouragement for this kind of wry sort of humor. I remember one time we were talking about Dick Cheney. And I said, Robert, you know, I have to tell you something about Dick Cheney. A very devout Catholic friend of mine, she came to me the other day and she said, you know, every time Cheney goes into the hospital, I pray really, really hard for him. And, you know, I'm thinking, wow, you know, love your enemies, pray for those who injure you. You know, this is really, she says, I pray so hard, but then he always gets better. So I was delighted to hear that Madre, gave Robert an award. Now, Madre, as most of you know, is an organization, it's a national organization that promotes justice and empowerment for women. And every year they name just a few good men, okay? They're pretty selective. And Robert was one of those, okay? And what did that bring back to, yeah, all right. Now, Robert was a lot of things, but he was also a feminist, and I think that's a real feather in all of our cap, that Robert felt free and felt empowered to be a feminist. Now, he was one of the few good men for Madre, and that reminded me of that incredible movie, you know, that movie back 20 years ago, which was called A Few Good Men. You remember it? Jack Nicholson? The other guy was Tom Cruise. And at the end of it, Jack Nicholson says, you can't handle the truth! Remember? Well, Robert could. And the other people who spoke tonight, and you out there, can. And that's good. There's another fellow who could handle the truth. So could Danny Schechter. My fellow Bronxite. Presente, Danny Schechter. Danny went to DeWitt Clinton with so many other special people. He and I used to talk about the People's Republic of the Bronx and how we would withdraw citizenship from Colin Powell and Eric Holder and everybody else who forgot their roots, everybody else who shamed where we come from in the Bronx. But we were just about to fill out the forms, and we never got to it. But the People's of the Republic of the Bronx was something special. Last thing I'll say has to do with the faith, the spiritual aspects that have been raised here tonight already. Paulette mentioned that Robert had studied to be a Jesuit in the seminary for a year or two. Way back when, and the Jesuits, the good ones, style themselves as men for others. And there's one that personifies that in a way that is almost beyond replication, and that's Dan Berrigan, who's at Fordham now. And Berrigan is one of those folks that is about authentic freedom, about black liberation, which must come first, given the fact that our country's original sin is racism. Dan is not doing so well. He's very old and very frail. But I saw him a year ago, and I was going to see Ed Snowden in Moscow. And I said, Dan, would you have a word for Ed Snowden? And he looked up and he smiled and he says, yeah, tell him he did the right thing. And then I said, another Dan, a friend of yours, Dan Ellsberg, knew I was going to come here. What do you have to say to Dan Ellsberg? And he looked at me and he said, tell him he did the right thing too. Well, I want to read a poem that Dan Berrigan wrote for people like Robert Knight. It was a limited edition, never published, but it speaks volumes about people like Robert. And here it is. It's called Some. It's very brief, and I'll end with this poem. Some stood up once and sat down. Some walked a mile and walked away. Some stood up twice, then sat down. I've had it, they said. Some walked 2 miles, then walked away. It was just too much, they cried. Some stood and stood and stood. They were taken for fools. They were taken for being taken in. Some walked and walked and walked. They walked the earth. They walked the waters. They walked the air. Where do you stand? They were asked. Why do you walk? Because of the children, they said. And because of the heart. And because of the bread. Because the cause is the heart's beat and the children born and the risen bread. Daniel Berrigan, S.J. Thank you all.
And we were just listening to Mr. Ray McGovern, and our next speaker is the poet and biographer of Mr. Jimi Hendrix. His name is Mr. David Henderson.
When I... not only as a poet, but as a biographer of Jimi Hendrix. Yeah. David Henderson.
Let's see, I'm honored to be here to say hi to Robert. Robert, I could always depend on him listening as I did so avidly to him on the radio. I could always depend on his perspective, on him to have a very special point of view about news items and things happening, and I relied upon that. I really miss him now, but his sensitivity was a part of his brilliance, his perspective, and I really miss him. Michael Ferguson Brown is the name of this poem, and I thought about Robert when I was writing this because I did miss his perspective. Michael Brown had been killed. This whole business with the grand jury and the testimony and the data and I knew that Robert would find some insight into that, which I haven't really experienced. But anyway, I wrote this poem. It's called Michael. Well, thank you. This is Michael Ferguson Brown. The new place we are. The Emmett Till equation, in effect down through time, used to be accusations had to be whistling at a white woman. Now the deadly provocation can simply be a black boy walking down the street. Ferguson, Michael, the new place we are, the foundation continuum of a Trayvon or even a Rodney King, for heaven's sake, who would drown in L.A. in a private pool his ritual torture awarded him. The Emmett Till equation can transpose a white woman into a white cop or a cop of color in a cop uniform that makes them, by definition, other orders of being. Abuse by a black boy, response, extreme prejudice. That a cop, a policeman, would be indicted for the murder of a black person? Precedence waiting to happen. Looking at some of this Ferguson, Missouri grand jury stuff, the contradictions are hidden in the newspaper reports, that is, hidden in plain sight, as they were to those in attendance, as they must be to pass muster. but upon obvious discovery, they are deadly. There are skulls and crossbones at the entrance of these postings as warnings of danger, not to venture too far within the data. Police state prosecutor, prosecutor of police state, prosecution in the police state, execution prosecutions, execution by profile under martial law, when and where there is no law, no law, no law, no law. We are lawless, lawless, with no law, no law, no law. Corporate government anarchy, the nonsense, lawless judgments of the fascist state. No proxies, no symbolism, no picnics and souvenirs in the campgrounds, in the campgrounds with the ritual hangings. Lynch law, lawless, lynch not, lynch not. Lynch Cove, Lynchburg, Lynchville, Lynch City, USA. Lynchtown, Lynchville, Lynch burgers in uniform of profile, Lynch utopia. Sir William Lynch, 1742 to 1820, of Pennsylvania, Virginia. Self-instituted lynching tribunals, 1805 to 1815. Sir Lynch, considered expert in deterrence to insurrections against slavery prior to the ultimate torture leading to post-ultimate immolation from tree of pyre, or pyre. The strategy during peace was the fostering of conflict by any means possible or necessary. Young against old, light-skinned against dark, women against men, divide to further conquer and save the necessary loss by lynchings of valuable property. Although a small profit could be made from the lynching by organizing them around municipal picnics and the selling of souvenirs of the event, that profit was only a one-time thing, small consolation for lifetimes of labor. Another large consolation for the ghost of Sir Lynch, institute those Lynch principles into the future, into the common law of the police and the prosecutors, so their administrations of justice are at their sole discretion and indicate the state without, souls within. Thanks.
We would like to, at this point, it's a tough act to follow, man, but... You know, I worked at the Kunstler Fund. I had the great opportunity to be the director of the Kunstler Fund for 15 years. In spite of my very bad behavior, they kept me there as a director. And we got a lot of stuff done in Tulia, Rockefeller drug laws. Kunstler Fund was a major force in change. We didn't make a lot of money. We were bad. We didn't like Soros. People didn't like Bill Kunstler, you know, so we didn't like have a lot of money to work with, but we had a lot of people. John Brown versus, you know, others. We were the John Brown of the anti-drug law movement. And the head of the Kunstler Fund, the president of the Kunstler Fund is here with us today, who was very close to Robert Knight for many years. And, she is a real remarkable civil rights attorney from the Center for Constitutional Rights. She has a long record. She's won many awards. And when the Rockefeller laws were changed in 2005, Margaret Radner Kunstler represented more people in prison than any other organization in the entire state, getting people resentenced. She represented 40 of the people who were up for resentencing and at pro bono. So would you welcome the remarkable, talented, brilliant Margaret Radner Kunstler. And beautiful.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Randy. That was quite an introduction. Is this the right mic? Oh, okay. You know, I want to thank Paulette for putting this together. I know how hard she worked on it, but I also want to say one other thing that all of us know and all of us experience, but I want to say it here tonight, and that is when Paulette and Robert came together and had this wonderful love affair, Robert was the happiest human being that we all knew. I mean, he just bloomed. And their relationship just made his life perfect. So Robert was a really good friend of mine, and actually we had a few things in common. We both loved Bill Kunstler. We both loved Odetta. We both loved Libby and Bianca, and Bianca's even here tonight. She's that little white dog that you saw kissing. Yeah. But, you know, and the other thing is that we were both kind of public and private in weird ways and uncomfortable in the same kind of way with the public and the private. So that was another thing that we shared. And also, we shared an interest in the universe. And I was ignorant, and Robert would try to educate me. And every once in a while, he'd call up and he'd say, oh, there's this great meteor shower that we should go out and see, or something is happening. And we would go out and try to see it. And usually we saw nothing because the light was too big in the city, and or it was raining. And so we couldn't really see anything. But once we did see something, and that was we went out to see the last orbit of the Mir. And for some reason, we got to see the Mir over the Hudson River. So that was a very exciting experience. And I came across this poem that I think kind of represents Robert's concept of spirituality and the experience that he had with the universe and with the celestial things. And it's a poem by Walt Whitman, and it's called On the Beach at Night Alone. And here it is. A vast similitude interlocks all spheres, grown, ungrown, small, large, suns, moons, planets, all distances of place, however wide, all distances of time, all inanimate forms, all souls, all living bodies, though they be so ever different or in different worlds. All gaseous, watery, vegetable, mineral processes, the fishes, the brutes, all nations, colors, barbarisms, civilizations, languages, all identities that have existed or may exist on this globe or any globe, all lives and deaths, all of the past, present, and future. This vast similitude spans them and always has spanned and shall forever span them and completely hold and enclose them. Thank you.
Look, coming up now is Robert Knight was huge in Tulia, Texas. Robert Knight went down to Tulia, Texas. I was there. Margaret was there with Robert Knight. The Kunstler girls were there with Robert Knight. We went down there in way back in Tulia, Texas. The biggest case, huge. You all know about Tulia, Texas. Well, Robert was there. He was there on the ground, and he came up with the best reports. All of his reports when he was a radio reporter, when he did stories for Dennis Bernstein or for Wake Up Call or for the WBAI News, when Robert did a story, it's like Beethoven. You can't come up with a bad story. Everyone was great. He was that magical. His voice. He did 60 Mimics. You heard that theme song. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That was a show we did back in 1993. 60 Mimics. Robert was the anchor. His voice. The greatest radio voice I've ever heard in my entire life. He and Margaret Ratner Kunstler were the co-hosts of 60 Mimics. That's where that music from The Third Man came in tonight. In that, I mean, you'd have to know the whole story why that was there. But coming up now is someone that Margaret, Robert, and I know very well. And this is the most remarkable human being I think I've ever met. You know who Elaine Bartlett is? Elaine Bartlett did 16 years, 3 months, and 21 days, and 3 hours, whatever it was, in prison for a minor drug offense, ripping her away from her 4 children under the Rockefeller drug laws. Robert Knight's reports. Robert Knight worked with Elaine. Robert Knight went to Tulia with Elaine. Elaine has a book out there, Life on the Outside. The Rockefeller drug laws, she represents the movement. She represents the strength against the Rockefeller drug laws. Elaine Bartlett is, is my hero. And so she spent time with Robert, and she's going to talk about her moments with Robert, the hero in the movement to change the Rockefeller drug laws. Would you please stand up for Elaine Bartlett?
Thank you. I want to thank everybody for thinking about me and giving me the opportunity to speak here tonight. When I met Robert Knight, I was known as 84G0068. People like Robert Knight, Randy, Margaret, Charles Groton, and so many others that have touched my life since I came out of prison has showed me that I am Elaine Bartlett that stands here before you today. When I think about Robert Knight, I think about the fact that he understands the struggles of poor people and what goes on in our communities, not only in New York, but all around the world. He understands that the Rockefeller drug laws and the effects that it had on so many families, and how when you incarcerate someone for such a long period of time, especially a woman, man, child, that you affect the whole family is affected by that. When you give someone a sentence, a first-time offender for 20 to life, or for any crime, because we are not God. We are not here to judge each other. We're supposed to love each other, cherish each other, and help each other through hard times. And everybody has skeletons in their closet. Some of us are educated at a younger age, and we're able to overcome things. Some of us, our struggles are much harder, and it takes a longer period of time for us to understand life and the reason that we're here. People like Robert Knight is the type of person that you want to keep his legacy going. You want to understand that it's more than just money and power. It's about being human and humanity. And we need to understand, in order to change and break cycles, that you have to give people chances, and you cannot be judging people. Robert Knight was the type of man that when I met him, he looked at me as Elaine Bartlett. He didn't see written on my face that I had been incarcerated for such a long period of time. He didn't judge where I came from or the families who were incarcerated. And that is what I want to remember Robert Knight as, being a type of person that understood there's a lot more to life in this universe than we could even imagine. And that you have to be able to forgive people, understand, and be caring. And to know that the people in power that have the ability, the knowledge, and the resources to make changes, that we need you, and we need you to help us to make the changes. Our churches is failing our families and the communities. Robert Knight understood that too. He understood that there's more about to a church than just going to church every Sunday and worshiping. When you do things like that, you have to open the doors to your community, not just the people that attend your church. The ones that are lost out there is the ones you should be seeking bringing into the churches. When I think about my travels and everything that I've done, I'm honored to meet a man like Robert Knight. And as I stand here and I've listened to all the wonderful things here tonight about him, I could only say that it's time that y'all pull together and keep his legacy going and let his legacy represent the type of man that he really was, and let it never be forgotten. These are the type of things that we have to keep going to keep making change and for people to understand our history and the struggles and everything that we've been through. Because people like that, they're gifted and they're here, and we all have our talents in our own way. And he was the type of man that recognized, no matter where you came from, no matter what you've been through, that there was a good soul in there, and he understood and seen beyond all of that and was able to see clearly people for who they are. And with that, I thank you.
Wow. Our next speaker is a lady who I would listen to all the time discuss local public affairs issues with Robert, and she had such amazing encyclopedic knowledge about the goings-on within the local mayoral and statewide administrations, and amazing knowledge about the environment. And so I was lucky to track her down, and her name is Miss Leslie Lowe.
I don't know, I can't remember when I first started listening to Earthwatch or when I actually met Robert. I'm a member of Insomniacs Anonymous, so I do remember one night hearing some music that caught my attention, so I was listening. And then this voice, Robert's musical, marvelous radio voice, and then the intelligence. I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked. And I finally got the courage to start calling into the show and talking to Robert, and we'd have pretty long conversations. And at one point, he actually invited me to become a regular on his show. And I did a segment called High Finance and Low Politics. And Robert was a polymath, as you all know. I mean, he, from science to comic books to movies and music. I remember one time we were listening to Ella Fitzgerald, and she was singing Every Time We Say Goodbye. And in that, there's How Strange the Change from Major to Minor. And Robert pointed out that there's a change in the music from major to minor. I moved to New Orleans. I had lost contact with Robert. And something very odd, I was in Congo Square, Armstrong Park, by the ancestor tree, this magnificent live oak tree, where our ancestors used to gather on the one day when they were free from their forced labor, to sing and dance, exchange goods. And suddenly I started thinking about Robert. I don't know why. 2 days later, I had an email from Paulette. I didn't know Robert had died. And I said, I have to be there. I have to be there because his ectoplasmic presence commands me to be there. And in the plane coming to New York, I was thinking, and this is what came into my head. It's a poem by Emily Dickinson, and I think it's especially apt for Robert. This world is not conclusion. A species stands beyond, invisible as music, but positive as sound. It beckons and it baffles. Philosophy don't know. And through a riddle at the last, sagacity must go. To guess it, puzzle scholars. To gain it, men have borne crucifixion. Shown, faith slips and laughs and rallies. Grasps at a twig of evidence, asks a vein the way. Strong gestures from the pulpit, hallelujahs roll. Narcotics cannot still the tooth that nibbles at the soul. Thank you, Robert.
It's my honor to introduce our next performer, the formidable David Amram.
Just like to thank all of you for being here, thank Paulette, and thank Robert for what he did, because, as we all know, if you could put something beautiful out into that world while you're here, even a tiny little thing, and have one person get something from it and help to change their lives so they can have their creativity, their intellectual abilities, and their spirit fostered, then you've done something so worthwhile. And in our society, sometimes people say, well, you know, if it's free, it's worthless. Actually, Robert knew it's priceless. So somewhere out there, someone Robert never would have met, and we might not meet, who was just a young kid, like my son, who's now 31, was when he heard Robert when he was about 7, will have some picture of something so that they can do something in their life and think in a clearer way. And years ago, when I met Robert, way back when he was starting out at WBAI, I told him, back in 1956, when I was playing with Charles Mingus, I saw John Coltrane. Coltrane came and he said, Dave, what do you think about Einstein's theory of relativity? And I was uncharacteristically silent. And then he went into this whole incredible talk about how the Egyptians have built the pyramids and the structure, the way those pyramids were built and the shadows that they cast were related to the whole harmony in the universe. And years later, when he wrote Giant Steps and there was a graph showing those pyramids, I understood what he was talking about in terms of the harmony and the structure and the poetry and the beauty of the constellations. And Robert said, well, that's true, but he said, remember, it's not just the science, it's the great unknown, it's the spirit. And he also discussed how the wonderful saxophone player Stanley Turrentine has said, the problem with jazz is when they took it out of the church. So since we're in the church, I'd just like to play a very, very short, beautiful song that I hope can be a tiny little tribute to Robert. I'm going to do it in a special WBAI, one-time-only fashion, depending on what's available. And sneak over to the piano, and if that doesn't work, I'll try something else. But we all remember when the corporate America took over youth culture to get that dollar of all those young people, and they said, don't trust anybody over 30. Robert said, you know, I'm over 30. I think they can trust me. And we talked about someone who was way over 30, who'd made an incredible recording in the 1960s of a great song. His name was Louis Armstrong. So we're going to try and bring that song back into that church where we are now. And remember what T.O. Bakel said, the great actor, on his 85th birthday, I played for him. And he said, you know, David, he said, people are worried. I'm turning 85. They come up and they say, T.O., are you okay?
And, well, unfortunately, we have to let it end at that moment. But the good news is...
The good news is that we will continue this next week. You'll be able to hear Mr. Amram singing What a Wonderful World.
Yeah, it was a very special part of the event, of the commemorative tribute to the life of Robert Knight. And we want to share that with you, but we can't because we're out of time. You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. This has been Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine Davis in studio with
Paulette Spencer.
Okay, so we've had some technical issues, but we hope you've been able to truly appreciate and enjoy this evening's program. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. We actually have a minute before Hour of the Wolf. The reason we have a minute is, well, I might as well just go ahead and let it rock. Stay tuned. Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program of science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This is a pre-recorded program. I will actually also be on till 5. Lister is away. But you're going to hear some real Sturm und Drang this morning. There's nothing you can do about that thunder other than enjoy. Stay tuned. We've got Rajan Khanna, Michael Swanwick, and Ken Liu coming up. I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. When you think about it, can we ever truly know a person? Oh, Jesus bleep, there goes Dan again thinking he's being profound. Yeah, okay, it's a hackneyed thought, but that doesn't mean it isn't an issue. You can see a person every day, recognize him or her, but how much of that person do you really know? That's a question that's the engine behind a lot of movies. It's all over the place, actually. Hitchcock's Suspicion, Training Day, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Empire Strikes Back. You know, somewhere inside that black mask, there's got to be a good Darth Vader, right? Anyway, Korean director Jong Yol-baek makes his feature film debut by flipping the question on its ear in the romantic comedy The Beauty Inside. This is actually the elaboration of an American miniseries of short films that appeared on the web a couple of years ago, and the plot is essentially the same. A furniture designer, here named Wu Jin, falls in love and begins a courtship with a beautiful furniture store salesperson named Yi Su. The wrinkle is that every day, Wu Jin awakens in a new body, with no control over age, sex, nationality, language, an odd variable in context, or attractiveness. So above and beyond the difficulties of follow-up dates, turns out there's only so much Red Bull one can drink before the body just says, "I want to sleep." Once the relationship is underway, Yi Su, the girlfriend, faces the unusual dilemma of knowing the man inside, but never being sure whether she'll recognize the face that greets her with each new day. The film is very sweet, very clever. Director Baik's low-key approach is lovely and goes down very easy. But it also means that Wu Jin is portrayed as a very reserved, very reclusive character. Given his situation, that's not surprising, and I can understand the practical consideration for it as well. By my estimate, there are at least 24 actors playing the same person. The fewer distinctive tics the character has, the more successful the illusion will be that it is actually the same person. But that doesn't leave a whole lot of personality to hang on to, and the lack is felt. To Baik's credit, you still wind up caring for the guy, but while Yi Su sees the things that make Wu Jin Wu Jin, it's harder for us to know what it is in the man that makes her think he's worth all this trouble. There's another thing about Yi Su. The Beauty Inside is all about loving the person despite the externals. I mean, it's there in the title. But given the casting of the very pretty Hyo Joo Han as Yi Su, there is the suggestion that the philosophy is a decidedly one-way street. He could look like a 50-year-old bank manager one day, or a guy whose face got pushed in by a shovel the next, but damn is his girlfriend good-looking. By the way, the original series cast Mary Elizabeth Winstead in the role, so the same issue applies there. It certainly isn't that attractive people are incapable of love, or unattractive people will automatically seek out their own kind, or are undeserving of the love of the pretty, but it would have added some welcome complexity if Baik hadn't taken the path of least resistance in casting his female lead. Like I said, The Beauty Inside goes down easy, but maybe it would have benefited from being not quite that easy. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website, so check out what you missed by going to mightymoviepodcast.com.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Again, this is a pre-recorded episode of Hour of the Wolf, and I do what I can to keep the noise level down, but there's a thunderstorm, and if we were at the BAI studios, you'd probably hear it anyway if it were at the same time. This is, however, ooh, nice one. This is about 4 in the afternoon. Hopefully, by the time we're airing, that won't be quite so, well, Sturm und Drang, as I said earlier. But we have quite a jam-packed program for you this morning. Last night, we had the kickoff of our 25th anniversary of the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, right? I should say right here in this building, except I'm not here in this building. I'm there in that building at 388 Atlantic Avenue, okay? Same place as WBAI, which is the third floor, but at the ground floor, Commons Cafe, Brooklyn Commons Cafe. And we had Rajan Khanna and Michael Swanwick. But before we get to that, a couple of announcements. Not only did we have a wonderful and great reading last night, which you're going to hear shortly, but this coming Wednesday, September 16th, at the KGB Bar, the Fantastic Fiction at KGB reading series, which is hosted by Ellen Datlow and Matt Kressel, will have Tom Monteleone and Lawrence C. Connolly. So that's this coming Wednesday, September 16th at 7 p.m. And the KGB Bar is located at 85 East 4th Street, just off the second floor on Second Avenue, or the other way around, just off Second Avenue on the second floor. One way or the other, do go. Admission is free. You'll have a good time. And speaking of Ellen Datlow, she will be our live guest next week on the program. And I have a full bio for her. And, well, it's worth reading, because you should know about Ellen Datlow if you don't already. Ellen Datlow has been editing science fiction, fantasy, and horror fiction for over 30 years as the fiction editor of Omni Magazine and editor of Event Horizon and Sci Fiction. She currently acquires short fiction for Tor.com. In addition, she's edited more than 60 science fiction, fantasy, and horror anthologies, including the annual The Best Horror of the Year, Lovecraft's Monsters, Fearful Symmetries, Nightmare Carnival, The Cutting Room, and The Doll Collection. Nothing cute, by the way, about those dolls. Forthcoming is The Monstress. She has won multiple World Fantasy Awards, Locus Awards, Hugo Awards, Stoker Awards, International Horror Guild Awards, Shirley Jackson Awards, and the 2012 Il Posto Nero Black Spot Award for Excellence as Best Foreign Editor. Datlow was named recipient of the 2007 Carl Edward Wagner Award given at the British Fantasy Convention for Outstanding Contribution to the Genre. She was honored with the Life Achievement Award by the Horror Writers Association, an acknowledgement of superior achievement over an entire career, and honored with the World Fantasy Life Achievement Award at the 2014 World Fantasy Convention. She lives in New York and, well, as mentioned, co-hosts the monthly Fantastic Fiction reading series at the KGB Bar. More information can be found at datlow.com, that's datlow.com, and on Facebook and on Twitter as at Ellen Datlow. Okay, so, last night we began our 25th anniversary season of the NYRSF readings, NYRSF. I did a long, long intro. I am not going to replay that. There was a lot of byplay anyway. But what it comes down to is that we currently admission for that series is free, and it will remain so. But we push very, very hard for donations, because it all comes out of pocket. There are donations. Any shortfall, I have to pay for. So we're going to be doing a Kickstarter to avoid that. But we're going to do that at the end of the year, which makes for better gifting, and there's financial reasons for doing it and stuff like that.